Coming up next on This Week in Google, I'm Jason Howell. I'm here with Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham. We're going to talk a little bit about Android P because apparently the developer preview launched today. Also, Google is apparently working with the Department of Defense on analyzing drone footage. That's a little weird. Facebook is searching for the line between satire and fake news. And your Amazon Echo is laughing at you. How does that feel? All that more coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode number 447, recorded on Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. Geothermal it!
This Week in Google is brought to you by Lighthouse. With 3D and AI, Lighthouse is the only camera that gets your busy life at home. Get 15% off a Lighthouse camera with the promo code TWIT at light.house.
It's time for Twig This Week in Google, and this week there's a lot of Google. Actually, our doc is filled with Google, and I'm excited about that. I'm Jason Howell filling in for Leo, who... I feel like every time I fill in for Leo, I say he's gallivanting. He's not quite gallivanting yet. He's more in transit so that he can get to South by Southwest and then gallivant a little bit. So I'm happy to fill in for Leo. I'll do my best to fill in for him anyways. Joining us, you know him, you love him. At least I think you love him. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, professor at the CUNY School of Journalism. How's it going, Jeff?
All right, I was trying to show you the outside.
Oh, what's like going on outside?
Out the camera.
Is it snowing?
You can't even see it. It's white. It's like white out. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's
wow. You should be in Austin.
Yeah.
If I showed you my outside, let's see, Jeff. Ready?
I've lost two. Oh, Stacy, that's mean. Oh, that's so
sunny and beautiful.
Look at all that green on the trees. You can actually see the green on the trees.
You can't see anything, no.
Stacy Higginbotham, creator of the IoT podcast at iotpodcast.com and so many other things. How you doing, Stacy?
I'm doing super well. It's a beautiful sunny day in Austin. It would have been awesome if Leo had planned his travel so he could just like pop in that door right behind me and just be like, hello, guys.
As long as you let him in downstairs first.
If
suddenly he gets there, he's like, I'm coming.
She can do that remotely because she's Stacy.
That's true. You are the queen of IoT.
We couldn't have that happen.
No, last week, she ran out of things. She had no things.
There was no things?
I was very upset.
Wait a minute.
Do you have any things? Have you gotten more things, Stacey?
So this isn't a physical thing, but it applies to the things. I do have some more things that I'm now testing, but they're not ready yet.
I mean, the internet is filled with things. That's why they call it the internet of things. There are things all over the internet.
Stacey went through everything there was.
All the things.
There was no thing left.
Well, thankfully, it only takes a week to regenerate new things. And so I have a feeling that's going to be a change for this week. We'll check in on that later. I thought we were going in like reverse order and we're going to kind of change things.
No.
We'll save it for the end. So I had time to kind of poke through and read all this stuff. I will say one thing before we kind of get into the show that in times past when I've done This Week in Google, I've also been doing a daily tech news show that's called Tech News Today. Well, we don't do that anymore. And I realized how a little more challenging it is to drop into Twig when you're not like nose to the news every single day, every single story that comes through. So I spent good amount of time reading through a lot of these Google stories. I didn't work up a good like direction or thread to them. So
Take it as it goes, man. Take it as it goes.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to be like doing the show normally. Yeah. You're usually on point, whereas the rest of us are like, la, la, la.
I don't know. Well, sure. Obviously, we should start with quantum chips, right? Because that's totally where our strengths lie as a team. Would you say? We might as well.
Stacey's squeal.
I know. That's reason enough. Google is claiming to be near quantum supremacy, they say. And apparently this is a thing. That's the moment that quantum computers can outperform a traditional computer. Google isn't saying that they're necessarily there yet, but they're developing a 72-qubit processor, which is apparently a step up. Well, it's definitely a step up from the 9-qubit design that they showed off back in 2014. It's called Bristlecone.
How many qubits was Noah's Ark? Qubit. How many qubits was Noah's Ark?
That was qubits with a C. Because it's the Bible, I'm going to guess 40, but probably not.
42. How many qubits was Noah's Ark?
I can hardly hear it. It
was 300 qubits.
300.
30 qubits in height. 300 qubits in length. So Google, you got a ways to go before you become God.
Google, not more popular than God, but than Jesus. Bristlecone.
The Beatles.
Yeah. I know. I'm getting my wires crossed. I apologize. Bristlecone is basically their research testbed for all this stuff, scaling, error rates, all that kind of stuff with machine learning, of course, because Google loves its machine learning. And Google's saying it's cautiously optimistic that Bristlecone can outperform a classical computer sometime soon. So quantum computing, that's about all I got.
Now, explain this to me. How could it just be at the point of being in a computer? I thought that the whole point of quantum was it was already way steps ahead. Why is it at that
level? So that's what I'd like to talk about, because
that's good. That's what I was hoping for.
Woo-hoo. Normal computing goes one way. It functions in a complete quantum computers function in a completely different way. So basically saying it's better than a classical computer is kind of like saying, I'm trying to think of a good, like,
that queso is better than Chipotle queso.
No, I was thinking like humans can swim as well as fish or something like that. There's totally different mechanisms and ways to go about it. We swim in a completely different way than a fish, if that makes sense. Yes, so this is a terrible analogy. But so what the simulations they're performing on a classical computer, and to get to that level, you don't need as many qubits. To go beyond, which is where everyone's excited about and worried, because this could, you know, break like AES encryption at its highest levels, which I think is 256 right now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to quickly get to that point, but we're not there yet. But this is still exciting, because once you unleash a quantum computer, we're not exactly sure how it works exactly. It's not exactly a Schrodinger's cat problem, but we can't like check its work except by comparing it to normal computing simulations. Did that make any sense? Was that at all helpful?
I mean, that makes about as much sense as quantum computing ever actually does. Like, I know, technical level to me, I understand that it's really important and that it's a big wave. What you're describing actually really kind of reminds me of what we've been hearing the last couple of years about this buzzword we can't stop hearing about, which is artificial intelligence and stuff. Mm-hmm. That it's doing all of this learning and all of these calculations on its own. It's not nearly as easy. It's not the same thing as saying, hey, let's look at the code. It's more like, hey, let's look at the result. And that's about as clear as it gets, if I understand how artificial intelligence computing works. So
that's close.
Close enough.
Good enough. Yeah. Cause like a qubit is like, it's like a bit, right? Like a binary bit, except it has so much more information potential. So a 72-bit computer would be nothing, but a qubit is obviously way more and it encompasses way more information. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to explain this.
I think I understand. But if quantum computing has the potential to break things like AES encryption and everything, I mean, I'm trying to understand, like, is that good overall? Like, will that then spawn even more secure systems, let's say, because it's so hyper-capable of this sort of mathematic?
Most people look at it as being, like, a Y2K problem times a gajillion, because there's so much that revolves right now on AES encryption, and we don't currently have an alternative. There is actually a company called SecureRF that has just been certified a couple of weeks ago by NIST as being quantum unbreakable. But to explain how that works, I would have to send you their white paper that has a lot of equations and math in it, because I don't actually understand how it works. I had them explain it to me and it didn't penetrate at all. there was a lot of math, but I can direct you to it. I can send you a link to it.
And I will glance at the white paper.
It's about, and you will see the equations and you will go, oh.
I will go, why did I ever start the show with quantum computing?
This week in things we can't explain. And next week, blockchain.
Yes, let's spend
actually easier.
I know it is. It's a lot easier.
It probably is, but I get equally confused with blockchain. I can probably understand a little bit more about blockchain.
Blockchain, I get. It's the way, the presumptions people make when they apply it to something. Well, of course, it's going to affect the fruit industry by enabling you to understand where the kumquat came from.
We all know that, Jeff. We all know that. Let's see here. What else? I'm now realizing I started with Google. I could have so easily started with the big Google news, at least in the Android world. So why don't we start there?
Yeah,
quantum computing was like the amuse bouche.
Really? Notches? No.
Yeah. Notches. Okay. So let's talk about this because I think there's a lot to be said about this. So today, I was predicting that Android P, the next version, at least the developer preview of the next version of Android, was going to release on Pi Day. There was some sort of, which is March 14th, 3.14. It just made sense, right? Android P, Pi is delicious. Why wouldn't Google do that? And of course, they wouldn't do that because that was too obvious. That's how Google does things. Android P is now a thing starting today. It exists. If you're a daring individual who likes to install potentially buggy software on your device, go for it. Although I think most people that are writing about this are saying don't actually do that unless you have a spare device to put it on. And it has to be a Pixel this time around. So they're allowing you to load this through the SDK. So you got to do the full manual approach in order to get it on there. It has to be a Pixel device. It's not going to work on any of Google's other devices at this stage. It's not even going to work through the beta channel. So if you opt in through the easy beta channel through your Google account, it's not even an option yet. So they're probably waiting for a more stable version of this before you'll be able to do that. But
so among the changes,
yes, a lot of changes here. I think it's too early to know like how these compare to what we'll see when it releases officially in months down the line. Because usually with these developer previews, we see little bits and pieces, and over the coming months, we'll find out a little bit more. Things might go away and everything like that. But notification improvements. So the full notification panel, top to bottom, is now redesigned. You can see these are pictures of the Android P notification shade, and it's all white. There's no transparency. It's solid white, kind of similar to what we've been seeing a lot with Material Design, kind of a broader card-based system. You also see inline photos there. So inside notifications, you're going to get more context around things like messaging. So you can, for instance, on the left side, you see an inline photo actually as part of the notification. On the right side, you see a conversation. So instead of just showing you the notification of the message that just came through, it's going to show you a few of the messages prior as well, so you get a little bit of at a glance of an
I
idea.
I just love notifications. Let me act in the notification.
Yeah,
I just hope there's more of that.
Well, it seems like there is. They have the kind of the smart replies integrated in. So on that right side screenshot, you can see some of those.
Or even the smart replies. Oh,
yep. So you can see
that's cool.
And that's baked into the system, which I'm not surprised at all that they're going that route. And that just allows you at a glance to be able to use your notification even further to hopefully avoid, having to jump into an app, every single time you get a notification to do something.
By the way, just a question while we're on smart replies, just a little tiny detour, just one block detour.
Detour away.
Does smart replies universal in the sense, does it, see you there is what everybody says? Or if you're in a certain age group, does it say awesome?
Smart replies, from what I understand, smart replies are tailored to you. So they actually have insight into, and depending on the implementation, they have insight into your location. They have insight into your speaking style, how you would reply to these certain things. They're taking that all into account to hopefully give you a reply that speaks in your voice.
Cool.
Really?
Awesome.
Mine all, this explains much, because mine all involve a lot of exclamation points. And I just assumed this was just Google getting super excited about things, but maybe it's me being super excited about
Google is reflecting your excitement. Do you use a lot of exclamation points?
I
apparently
sort of do. I am enthusiastic, but
Yes. Enthusiasm is a good thing. It's working. That's awesome.
Well, I asked once if people knew that I was using, you know, because I use them actually a lot. They're very helpful to me. So I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Do you ever find anyone who's insulted that you do that to them?
No one's been insulted yet, but I'm waiting for Google to do the I will honor the embargo, because that currently is never one of my replies, and that would be an awesome reply to have. Yes, fine, I'll honor the embargo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But at the same time, if you make honoring an embargo such an impulsive button tap, you might not remember that you did that later. It's probably best that you have to type that out. It's almost like you're writing your signature. Like, yes, I will.
Wow. You take your embargoes. I mean, I've never broken an embargo. Oh, I have once accidentally, but
I rarely do the embargo thing, to be honest.
It's a lot of pressure. So I'm like,
it's hard to not talk about things if I don't know about them. Well, but then I want to know about them anyways. I certainly wasn't on the embargo that lifted at 10 a.m. for Android P developer preview. That's for sure. As far as notifications, I think that's it based on what we've seen right now. But I'm sure there will be more, like I said. Other features, indoor Wi-Fi positioning. So if you've ever been inside and you're doing any sort of a navigation, you know, anything, and you realize that your GPS signal is lost or weak or whatever, this is a way around that. And it's basically based on Wi-Fi round trip time, which can calculate positioning indoors when GPS fails if three or more access points are in range. So it can kind of triangulate your location within, I think, 1 to 2 meters when you're indoors. And I don't know, that seems like a signal for, you know, certain maps capabilities. You already have like indoor mapping, I think, in some regards, but this will.
I thought they had been using Wi-Fi for better geopositioning for a long time, including indoors. I mean, they had the whole Skyhook deal. So I'm curious, what is it? Just more granular at this level?
It must be, yeah. Because I know I know what you're talking about there too. This seems a little bit more specific. Like, I don't know if what you're talking about is as fine of detail as, you know, like 1 to 2 meters, or, you know, is what you're talking about capable of doing like step by step navigation inside of a building? I'm not quite so sure.
Okay.
I would imagine that I would be relying on GPS in that regard, and this would hopefully remove you from that. So I guess we will see. So Notch, Jeff, you mentioned the Notch.
Jeez,
Notch is going to be one of those words of 2018, I think.
It's so stupid. It looks so dumb.
All right, why is Notch so stupid?
Steve Jobs would never ever have allowed the Notch.
Yeah.
It is a design sin. And if you want to have, you know, a screen with two little ears that do different things, then I'm fine. Put the ears there. It's okay. But to make it as if God made screens with notches, come on. Stop. And then copying Apple? Why? Come on, Google. Have some spine.
Well, but are they copying Apple? Essential had the notch first. I mean, technically, they had the first device that released with a notch that I can remember anyways. Well,
copying stupidity? Why?
Yes. Why? Everybody's jumping on the Notch bandwagon, it seems like. So I did a switch with Megan Maroney where I used the iPhone 10 for 6 weeks. She surprised me with that. I thought it was going to be a month, and it ended up being 6 weeks. A little long, but anyways. She got the Pixel 2 XL. I got the iPhone 10. And I have to say, like, in my time with it, like, the Notch really did not bug me at all. It was fine. Like, I over time, I kind of understood why. Like, I get the fact that people have more of an expectation now, or maybe hardware manufacturers have instilled more of an expectation in people to have their displays go to the edge. We also expect for sensors and certain things to be up at the top of the phone. This would be a way to accomplish both, I guess. In my use, it didn't really bug me that much, and I thought it was going to totally bug me, but it really didn't. So I guess to some degree, I'm kind of like, whatever.
It reminds me of people who watch DVDs in widescreen versus full screen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it feels kind of like that kind of debate where, you know, eventually when you're watching the movie, if the movie's good, you just focus on the movie, right? You're not really focused on the blackness or the whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I look at the Nutch, but I am not a diehard. I do not have Jeff's passion for this issue. So I'm like,
Well, and I think that they're probably so, and they've made some other changes, which we'll talk about in a second, that seem to be inspired by the reality that is the Notch, the impending Notch. But I think that they're also building in smarts to allow you for, like, you go into immersive mode, which is the full screen. Say you're watching a movie. Movie's a prime example. Instead of giving you the movie with the Notch out of the side of it for no real good reason, and then you miss out on that portion of the video or movie that you're watching, it would have the ability to, in immersive mode, cut off the Notch so that you still get your square. It's still a very large screen. It's just
the way it should be anyway.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
All you need is kind of a little line there so that the screen has its logical basis.
Yeah.
Not
the Notch. But they're also making changes to the status bar up at the top. And one of the big ones that seems to be getting the news right now is the fact that they're putting the clock on the left-hand side of the screen, which when you think about an OS that has support for a Notch, and if there are going to be more phones, potentially, I'll just throw this out there, potentially a Pixel 3 that has a Notch. I'm just saying, crazier things could happen. That at least puts the clock on one side versus everything being weighted onto the right side. So it more evenly distributes what you have up there. And some people are seeing the clock on the left side as being a Notch influence decision.
Oh.
Notch gate.
I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, okay, now I'm going to have to train my brain to look at the clock on the other side. No.
Yeah, I know. It's the worst thing in the world, isn't it? Change. What else? There are some requirements. So, like, kind of underneath the hood, maybe less UI, more underneath the hood. Developers will have a requirement to target modern versions of Android. So they won't be able to update their apps past a given date without actually updating it entirely to the latest API level. So that's going to require developers that want to update their apps to keep things current. And in the past, you know, developers who didn't want to support a certain feature or whatever have been able to continue developing their apps, but still targeting, you know, last year's or the year before's API so that they wouldn't have to kind of update and bring everything else up to a certain level. Google's putting in the requirement that basically says after a certain date that they will determine with each version of Android, if you are going in to make any update to your app beyond that date and you're still targeting older APIs, you won't be able to make that update. You're going to have to, it's going to force you to update to that modern API level. That's got to be good for security reasons, for keeping everything consistent. Also for encouraging developers to actually support some of these new features instead of, instead of putting it off. But it is definitely Google kind of, you know, stepping on the toes of developers and saying, we know what's better for you than you do, so just do this. So I don't know how much that's really going to get on anybody's nerves. I'm sure some developers won't like that very much. What else? Lots of little things. I mean, this is the first developer preview, so that, you know, there's
multi-camera API.
Yes, multi-camera. Thank you. I don't really know what the exact details about that are, other than that it will support multi-cameras with the API, and they say that will enable you to do creative things, you know, with that official support. What are creative things? I don't know.
Well, I think it's the whole, what's the camera that does the depth of field?
And you Lytro. Decide
what you want to focus on later, Lytro, right? I mean, eventually, right? You could do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's supporting
triangulation,
those sorts of things, yeah, on the system level instead of requiring,
right,
you know, the hardware manufacturers or developers to kind of come up with their own unique ways to tackle it. So,
open mobile API for NFC payments.
Oh, I missed that. What's that all about?
I have that from the Android Police one.
Oh,
apps
okay.
will be able to access secure elements and enable smart card payments.
Okay,
from an API.
Not bad.
That would be nice. Do you guys use Google Pay?
No.
No, because okay, my credit card won't go, doesn't accept it.
Okay.
Oh, that's a bummer. You'd use it otherwise? Bummer.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, Stacey?
No, I had it on, I want to say an older phone, maybe. But at that point in time, no one took it. So then I didn't add it. And now I'm kind of like, should I try it again? I have been struck by jealousy when people walk up with their phones and they pay.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, I could be that woman.
It's nice when it
works. You know, I haven't even gotten to the point. I don't even use the Starbucks order ahead app.
I do.
I'm such a creature of old habit. Does it work well?
Yeah, well, sometimes it takes. So I actually was in line at the airport at a long Starbucks, like a really long line. And the guy in front of me did a mobile order, and he and I picked ours up at the exact same time because I guess he thought he was going to take. So the answer is, by the time I think about it, I'm usually already in the Starbucks. Sometimes I do it from my car before I walk into the Starbucks, but then I feel really silly. I don't know.
All right. So the thing that has me upset about this update is they're cutting off old Nexus phones and the Pixel C tablet.
Yeah, they are. So Nexus 5X, Nexus 6P, and Pixel C no longer supported. It's been confirmed, no longer supported with the dev preview. And then, of course, they looked into it. Ron Amadio at Ars Technica asked Google, and Google said officially that those devices will not be getting Android P when it releases, though they will be getting monthly security updates through November of this year. And then I think the monthly updates will...
The Pixel C is still really useful. I mean, if I could still use my Nexus 7, I would. It's a wonderful device.
That's
its obsolescence is irritating.
Yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that. Burke here at the studio showed me a Nexus 7 just an hour ago. And he was like, so I just got this. What can I do with it? I'm like, I don't think you got a whole lot of options on that thing.
That's a great... Yeah, I saw it's at my school. They're putting some old tablets on classrooms so they can have a display of when it's available or something, right? And they smashed up an old Nexus 7 because that's all it's good for now. And it just hurt.
there's a lot of camera software like turn your phone into a camera. So like People Power makes one. So that's an option.
Yeah.
Or I love the Nexus 7 because it actually fit in my rear pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. It had the pocketability factor for sure.
It did. It's great. Yeah. So that's gone. And I do carry around the Pixelbook now everywhere. I travel with it.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful traveling with the Pixel C and the keyboard. It was just great.
But how does that compare then to the Pixelbook? I mean, kind of same.
The problem is the Pixel. Here's the problem. I'll tell you, Dr. Android. I will tell you. I find that Android on the Pixelbook is just not ready for prime time.
Yeah.
A lot of things just don't operate very well. I'll get times when Netflix, I've got to try to restart it 10 times and it doesn't know that it's there. And some apps are still small and it's just not there and not ready. And so for Chrome, I love Chrome as an OS, but for Chrome to be the primary OS on the device with Android apps as well, no, it's a smoother operation, I think, to work on an Android device through the web.
Yeah, but then the keyboard functionality of the Android device, like I don't know, I find
the Pixel C keyboard was great. You had a Pixel C, didn't you?
I had the Pixel C. I had the keyboard.
I thought the keyboard was great.
I thought the keyboard was all right. I don't know. Ooh, I just, you know what? Picky. I never forced myself to live with it, though. And I think you probably need to kind of overcome that hurdle to really get to the point.
I don't know, Jason. You can live with the notch, but not the Pixel C keyboard? I question your judgment.
I don't know. It's easier for me to overlook the notch, but the keyboard, if it's a keyboard I don't like, and I think the more pressing thing for me is that I just don't feel like Android OS was a very productivity, like it wasn't very good on the productivity side of it.
No, that's true.
It's terrible. Yeah, that's why I've been, I'm with you.
Yeah, and so I mean, even if I was to get myself over the keyboard aspect, like I just don't enjoy working in Android for those types of things. I much more enjoy the Chrome OS experience for that. So maybe I'm biased. The Pixel C came out in December 2015. So it's now 3 years old, I believe. Well, no, sorry. 2 and a couple of months. So I guess it's just officially beyond its time.
You know, I saw a study a couple weeks ago, a mobile device, and this is on mobile devices, and it was from Chetan Sharma. It was his end of year study. They said that the average life of handsets in the U.S. is now 3 years. So having less than a 3 year, I know that's surprising. It's sort of surprising and sort of not surprising.
Right.
I mean, devices are super expensive. There's no subsidies now. So
exactly.
It feels like a 3 year should be then looking at your minimum support time for these devices for everyone who's not, and this isn't the people watching the show, but, you know, the rest of them.
For your aunt and uncle. I saw some old friends the other day, and the father is very old now. He's 90 something, and his wife died something like 4 years ago. He still has the flip phone because it still has her picture on it. And he'll open up the flip phone many times a day just to look at the picture. You know, there's reasons people hold on to these things that you can't imagine.
Yeah.
And the plan, I mean, it's planned obsolescence. It's the sin that we've talked about for years in capitalism. And now it's
not
real.
Always, you can point to it. It's not always planned obsolescence. In some cases, there are legit things like security patches. How many people do you want working on that? And then there's also like actual hardware elements. And, you know, Apple just got in trouble with this with the battery. They were making a decision from an engineering standpoint.
You're right.
I'm not saying that there isn't an element of that, but I don't think it's always evil. I think sometimes it's just a perspective that we don't respect in the tech industry.
Right.
I think you're right. And I think that there should be a principle that says a company comes out and says, we will support devices for this minimum amount of time, 3 years. And past that, we'll continue security updates for 2 years, something like that, right? That says that when you make an investment, and it is an investment for a lot of people. I mean, we're one percenters in the tech world. Because we'll spend the money as if we, even if we don't have it, to get the latest thing. That's just not true of a lot of people.
So official support, like we support it for 3 years, that is keeping it up to date on the major
I would argue for
OS
that.
Updates.
Yeah, years. I would argue for that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other challenge to this, and I think you guys were kind of touching on this a little bit, like using Burke as the example with the Nexus 7, is that he pointed out to me that it's actually running Android 7 on it right now. So, I mean, it's relatively modern version of the OS. Oreo is 8. Nougat is 7. So it's only one officially released version behind, yet he says it's slower than molasses, you know? And so, great, it has the latest version of, you know, one of the more recent versions of Android on it, but that doesn't necessarily make it better to use. It actually slows it down in the case
of the other part
hardware.
Of this, too, is the other, is the vendor problem. We tend to buy pure Android when we buy Android, but when I go to India and see the phones there, you know, they're three versions back, and that's what they're running.
Yep. Well, Android Go hopefully will address that.
You know, one hopes that, yes.
Which, are the really low-end new versions of Android phones.
Sorry. At the same time, Google does bring, you know, the new wowy things. The fact that Google Lens, for example, is on the rundown, is coming to all Android phones. That's cool, right? Yep. That's great. But you can't do that on a old phone. I get that.
Yeah, and I mean, even then, show of hands, who's using Google Lens all the time on their phone?
That was my next question to you. Do either of you use Google Lens?
No.
I did it once.
Exactly.
And I probably forgot that it existed.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
That is the problem, especially when it's baked into something like Google Photos. Like, yeah, that gives everybody access to Google Lens. And yes, it's neat when it works. I will say it does not work all the time, even when you go to use it, depending on what you're pointing it to. But, you know, it's embedded in your Photos app and, so it's a neat feature of that app, but it's not revolutionary. It's not point your camera at something and it pulls up a link for you to buy something, you know, immediately. It's a little bit more kind of on the back end, so to speak, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a reminder. But you know, on the other hand, there are some things that remind you too much. On my phone, the stupid squeeze thing drives me crazy.
Oh, me too. Thank you.
I love the squeeze.
Hate the squeeze.
You hate the notch. You hate the squeeze. Man, Jeff, what do you love?
Get off my lawn, modern technology.
Stupid technology. Dumb technology.
No, I agree with you, though, Jeff. And it was interesting because, like I said, Megan and I switched phones. So she had the Pixel 2 XL for 6 weeks. And she was talking about the squeeze all the time. She's like, oh, I love the squeeze, how it summons assistant or whatever. That the assistant is only ever summoned on the squeeze by accident for me. It's never
on
purpose.
To me? I put it in my vent holder in the car.
Oh,
and when I take it off, it squeezes.
Well, you can change the sensitivity for this if you go.
Yeah, you have to train it.
System gestures active edge, and there's a little slider here. so that a light squeeze would pull it up easily. A firm squeeze would pull it up.
A firm squeeze. I'm the kind of a guy who gives a firm squeeze.
You know, I love it for, so my favorite thing to do with the squeeze is actually turn on the flashlight. And I, because I've got it, usually it's when I've stuck my phone someplace and I'm trying to find something, I realize I can't see anything. So then I'm like, I squeeze it and I'm like, turn on flashlight. And it's like, wa-doom! And I'm like, ha ha. But I don't know. That's okay. Just me.
How often do you do that?
I lose a lot of things behind a lot of places, Jeff. It's very dark where I live. I don't know. I do want to add, because someone's talking about it in the chat room. I actually gave you a piece of software that they don't support it anymore. So I'm offering you a different one to run on your old Android device for security stuff. It's a company called, or it's software called Salient Eye. And if you look that up, you will see that you can download it and use it as a separate like camera. It's not ideal, but I mean, it's not going to function like an S cam, but it has a point if you want to use it.
I mean, yeah, this is kind of what I was telling Burke is like, you know, does your Nexus 7 really have a use as a traditional tablet in the way that, you know, you used it when it was first brand new? Yeah, probably not. Diminishing, definitely. But there are a whole lot of ways that you can repurpose these devices, you know, like don't feel like your only recourse is to, you know, take it out back and do the office space to it. Take a hammer to it. Like you could turn it into a security alarm system, like you're saying, or you could turn it into, I saw something the other day on XDA where you can take and, you know, well, actually this was more a Raspberry Pi, but I'm sure you could do it with an old Android device, you know, have it be the receiving screen that you mount in your car for Android Auto or something along those lines. You can get creative with it if you have the time, the patience and the understanding to do
it. Or you can give it to a kid and just tell him it's a camera. I think my daughter, I don't know, I had like a Samsung 3 maybe, and she's still videotaping the dog with that, and she's having a grand old time.
Great. So. That works perfect. It's a good camera.
Well, she wouldn't put Target clothes on her American Girl doll. She's going to get at some point that you're pulling one over on her.
Dude, she does not like technology. She is not, it does not get designer treatment for her. She's like,
really?
I'm good with that, actually. I'm like, here's your iPhone 6.
You should be. I'm being happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
Otherwise, it can cost you a fortune.
Right. She does have a MacBook. So.
Well, in our home, we have nothing but Android devices. Well, not true. I do have an iPad, but that's really specifically for like music production sort of things. So it's not like our kids ever use the iPad. Yet because of things like YouTube and I'm sure just popular media in general, you know, whenever my 8-year-old broaches the conversation of, hey, I want to get some sort of, you know, piece of technology, it's always labeled as iPad or iPhone. So there's a brand awareness there, even though in our home, it's all Android. I think it's just,
well, can you hand her an old Android phone and she'll be like, yeah, that's cool. Or does she actually want the iPhone?
No, I don't think, I think I probably could. I mean, she has a tablet, you know, each of my girls have a tablet that they can use only on the weekends for a couple hours. They're both Android tablets and they don't care. It's got the screen that gives them the thing that they want to watch, you know, as far as that's concerned. I'm sure there will be a time though when there are more pressure in, you know, there's more pressure in school and I've heard about that anyways. Being a thing where, you know, the kids that surround you are well more brand aware. And I'll be curious to see at that point if it makes a difference or not. If it makes a difference between iPhone and Android. I guess we'll
start saving up now, Jason.
I know. Put it away as a budget item. Those things aren't cheap. All right. So I think, I mean, there's a few other features, but they're really kind of nerdy and in the weeds and everything like that. I think ultimately we're going to hear more about this at Google I/O in a couple of months, and probably there will be an update to this Android P developer preview in probably like a month and a half. It seems to be what they do. They do a little refresh every other month. But
does
Android P have a dessert?
It is pie.
No, it's not.
Everybody presumes.
Oh,
Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think? I didn't think that pie was going to be
pie day
dessert,
and pie would be perfectly
but
sensible.
I thought
yes.
that made a lot of sense. But is there a dessert that you hope it will be?
But they don't announce the name when they let out the developer preview.
No, they don't.
They would do that later. So it'd be a lot of after pie day.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm fond of puzzles, but that's a pretty regional dessert. But why not educate people about them? Because they're delicious.
Pizzelle. Pizzelle? P-I-Z-Z-E-L-L-E. I've never...
I think it's like a waffle cone cookie kind of... Yeah. I don't know how to describe it. They're delicious. They're not too sweet.
Better than that. You know, if they're going to go brand name, you know what they do. It's Pez.
Oh, Pez.
No.
You could so... Yeah, if they go brand name, that's a good one, though, because you could so see a Pez dispenser of an Android figurine
on the
lawn.
Yes. Spitting out little green Pezzes.
And you know, when you go to a Google event, they're handing those out left and right with candy inside.
Okay, Jeff, yeah.
Wow, I hadn't heard Pez as an option, but that's a really good one.
Android Pez swag. Oh. A giant Pez dispenser.
I could just see it right now.
Yeah, people would love that. You're right. Do it, man.
Get on that train, Pez. Here's your marketing opportunity.
Google people, if you're listening, you're welcome.
you'll be getting a shipment of a Google Pez.
Yeah. If you get a Google Pez dispenser, I would like one. Thank you, Jeff.
Or at least just a piece of Pez from it. That would be
No. Pez candy is nasty.
It is nasty. Google, Google could do the Pez strip in the Google colors, too. The candies could come out in Google colors.
Yeah. Yeah, or the candies could be little Android figurines.
Now you're getting overboard.
No, they wouldn't fit. They would jam the dispenser.
They'd jam the dispenser, yeah.
Well, they'd make it the same shape, but they'd etch into them.
Etch in? You could do that. Yes, you could. Yes, you could.
Okay. See? Yeah. I like our little product marketing meeting.
Okay, here we go.
And speaking of product marketing... It's time to take a break. Actually, we're going to talk a lot more about other Google stuff, not Android stuff. I think we've kind of hashed out most of what we know about Android P. Maybe there's a few other tidbits in there, but definitely diving into more Google. But I hear Leo has something to tell you.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Stacy. I'm sorry I'm not here. As you know, I'm on my way to Austin for our big event on Friday at South by Southwest, but I had to just jump in for a moment to tell you about this thing. I love this thing. And Stacy, you were the one who told me about the Lighthouse. The Lighthouse, I don't even want to call it a camera. It is a camera, but it's so much more. It's a microphone. It's a speaker. It's got built-in artificial intelligence. It's the only camera that gets your busy life. You can't always be home. But if you have kids, pets, a nanny, a dog walker, and other people coming and going, there's one way to stay in the know about what's going on in your living room. Lighthouse. We have a lighthouse at home, and I just love it. It understands that life is more than just a bunch of motion alerts. Easy to set up. You pair it to your Wi-Fi. You put it in a good place, and then a couple of things happen. First of all, you can invite others to be in your circle of friends. You can have other owners, but also invite people who are, you know, going to be seen by the lighthouse. And you can also set it up that the lighthouse doesn't record when you're home, which Lisa has asked me to do. So it's great for privacy. But when we're not home, those lighthouse sensors, the 3D sensor sees your home in full 3D. It can distinguish between people and pets and other kinds of movement. It uses facial recognition. So when it sees somebody it doesn't know, it pings you on your smartphone. It lets you know, and you can immediately turn on the camera and see what's going on. Live streams in 1080p HD, has automatic night vision, plus two-way talk and a security siren. You can automatically have the camera turn off when you're home. I like that feature. You can turn the camera on and off whenever you're in want, so you're in complete control of it. Of course, bank-level encryption for your video data. And because it keeps a 30-day library of everything it's seen, you can ask it simple, natural queries like, what happened when I was gone? It literally understands, I'm not there, this is what happened when I was gone, and it only shows me the important stuff. You could say complicated things like, show me when the kids and the pets get home, or show me if there were any pets at all. What did the kids do when I was out yesterday? What did the pets do when I was out yesterday? Tell me if you don't see the kids by 5 p.m. on weekdays. You also can, the kids can wave at the camera, it recognizes waving, and will ping you and say, hey, Michael wants to talk, and I can turn on the camera and have a conversation with him. That is awesome, especially for younger kids that don't have smartphones who just want to say hi. When it comes to security, Lighthouse uses its artificial intelligence to tell you only when it detects actual movement from people or sometimes large objects like doors when you're away from home. And you want to see those doors open and close, right? No more false alerts just because it sees a shadow or pets or like that other dumb camera that was supposed to be smart that I bought that thought for days I was getting alerts because it was a Mylar balloon it thought was a person in the house. I love Lighthouse. I set it up, use it every day. I always know what's going on in my house. I want you to get a Lighthouse. You can go to light.house, light.house to learn more. Don't forget, if you want to buy one, use the promo code TWIT. You'll get 15% off a Lighthouse camera. And because it's still early days, early customers get 90 days of AI service at no cost. I love our Lighthouse. We have two. And we have one here in the studio, which is normally plugged in, but I unplugged it so I could show it to you. Light.house. By the way, this is awesome. It tilts and rotates, so it makes it very easy to point at exactly what you want to see and what you don't want to see. Light.house. 15% off when you use the promo code TWIT. Don't get a camera in your house. Get a smart device in your house. This is the device Stacy, when I told Stacy I got the other guy's camera, she said, "You doofus. You should have got a Lighthouse." So I did. Light.house. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT for 15% off. And now, back to the show, guys. I'll see you in Austin, Stacy.
Woohoo! And I'm surprised you said that because you called him a doofus.
That's the least of things I've called Leo.
That's light. Cool. So you're going to South by Southwest, I imagine. You're kind of there. Is it kind of like not a big deal because it's so normal?
It is actually such a big deal that I'm not doing most of it this year. Leo is the only the Leo event that is happening. I shouldn't, the TWIT event. Is it TWIT? Twig? All of us?
I think it's TWIT.
TWIT, yeah.
The TWIT event that's happening Friday morning at the Capital One Center at Antone's. We're doing a panel on IoT security or just security. And I'm doing that and not much else. But I hope to see everyone there if you're at South by Southwest. 8 a.m. Antone's.
Be there.
Be there. And Leo's also hosting something tomorrow night, too.
Yeah, I think we've got a meetup, right, tomorrow night. Is that right?
It's a meetup. M-E-A-T.
Friedman's Barbecue. Yeah, that's right. Friedman's Barbecue. Yep.
And no, awesome. Leo's not buying dinner. I want to be clear about
that. That's right. He is not buying dinner. He said it was an open bar, but it's not really an open bar either. He's not buying you dinner, nor is he buying you drinks.
I mean, the bar is open for business.
The bar is open.
Yeah, there's.
And if you're not from Texas, regard. You might be pleasantly surprised because the alcohol is relatively cheap here.
Nice. Cool. Well, I wish I could go. It's been a year since I've been to South by Southwest. Maybe next year. We'll see. Okay. So we got some Google news here. Let's start off with Zagat. Is it Zagat or Zagat? I never really know. Is Zagat like Zagat? Bob Saget or?
I always say Zagat.
Zagat. Well,
doesn't matter anymore.
Doesn't matter anymore. Google, you may remember, bought Zagat back in 2011. For $151 million, now Google's selling Zagat to The Infatuation, which is apparently a restaurant review company. I've never really heard of The Infatuation, but there you go. Apparently, they're doing really well. They turned a profit last year. They've been around for a number of years. Zagat reviews, if you may have noticed over the last few years, very de-emphasized on Google's part. Google, while it was owning it, really just kind of tended to opt for its own recommendations engine. And I feel like prior to the buyout, Zagat was, it was very much a household name. At least I was very aware of Zagat and then promptly stopped hearing anything about it. Supposedly Google did a redesign back in 2016, but, they weren't giving it the treatment that it deserved. So now it's going to The Infatuation and sounds like they're amped to have it as part of their network. So, either of you guys? Well, I guess.
Thoughts? Did Jeff, we lost Jeff?
Jeff's no longer. It was good while it lasted, Jeff. But I don't know, Stacey, were you much of a Zagat user? What did you think of the integration?
I feel like way back in the early dark ages before the internet was on your phone, I had a Zagat book and that was about it.
Yeah.
But once I had a phone, I think I switched to Yelp and then I got cranky at Yelp. So I switched to just Google reviews that they have. Yeah. And I imagine Google is just like, hey, dude, we could crowdsource this. Let's get rid of this Zagat stuff. Zagat was crowdsourced stuff before it was even cool. So sure.
Right. It was, it was a crowdsourced social network in print, basically, where they chose the clips that you saw. It was a super useful tool at the time, but you're right. You know, now that you mention it, I mean, we have really great reviews engines now. Like there are very trusted, easy to use, immediate places to be able to kind of check the tenor and the reputation of restaurants and all sorts of other businesses super quickly. Google obviously has its reviews and Yelp and whatnot. So a brand like Zagat maybe was, you know, a brand that's kind of locked in time. It was much more useful when it was a print option and there weren't a whole lot more to compare to it. And now times have kind of changed.
It's locked in paper. But yeah. I will say, so there is a piece of news that I'm excited about.
What's that?
And it's very small, but they're now going to let you leave messages, video messages, when you call people on Duo. Because I am one of like the 12 people who call people on Duo.
So the other 11 people are very happy.
The other 11 people are all related to me and I force them to do it, to download the app. So I was excited that I could, because no one ever actually picks up because no one uses it on a regular basis. So they're like, my phone's making a weird noise. I wonder what's happening.
Right. And why is that person staring at me? Meanwhile, it's the knock knock feature.
And then, you know, so now I can at least be like, hey, I called. But I can't imagine more. Does anyone else out there? Anyone? Bueller?
If my wife is traveling or if I'm traveling and we, you know, say, hey, we should hop on video chat to do this. I've gotten in the habit of calling her on Hangouts. I find it to be Duo. I find it to be more resilient, like network resilient. Mm-hmm. It tends to do a better job there. And it's just like, I know she's got a Pixel, last generation Pixel. I've got a Pixel device. I know the app's installed on there. Outside of that, never use it. I mean, I have no one else to use it with.
Mm. My husband's like, this is stupid. Just call me on Hangouts. I'm like, oh.
But why? Why opt for Hangouts from his perspective? Just because he's used to that, or?
I think it's because he's on an iPhone. Oh. And so he's had Hangouts on the iPhone for a while and downloading Duo. I mean, I made my BFF and my parents download it. And my mom, she is that person who's just like, what's happening? Huh? Stacy, are you on the phone?
Yeah, you're staring at me, but I just hear a ringtone. You're staring. Why are you looking at me and waving at me?
But yeah, I think the call, when I make it through to someone, I'm very excited. So yeah. I'm glad they're still developing on it. I would like to see other people like it. I don't know.
yeah. See it be more of an integral part of Android as a whole and pre-installed. But we don't get those things when it comes to messaging or video messaging or whatever. It's always kind of broken and convoluted. Apparently, the messages that you leave are going to disappear automatically after a day. So they are ephemeral messages that you leave.
That's a problem.
So it's there. Oh,
so
for a day.
If I'm on my deathbed, I'm not going to use that. I'm going to use something different.
Yeah, you want to that way. Yes. Yeah.
Probably. Hey, don't give your final message to the world on Snap either. Yeah.
No, Snap might not be around much longer. Oh. So.
Oh.
They're not doing very hot.
That's all right.
I don't use it anyway, so whatever. let's see here. What else did I find in here? What's that?
I was going to say Google Fiber, but you go with
yours. No, that's an interesting one. So this was
speaking about things that may not last.
Yeah, right. So on Motherboard, there was a post about kind of checking in with the progress of Google Fiber. 8 years ago, we started to hear about fiber for the first time, and you know, big ambitions when Google Fiber was rolling out to be a disruptor to the broadband industry. Offer really fast gigabit speeds in the US, low price, $70 a month. And, you know, ISPs, of course, kind of jumped on, you know, into these areas and lowered their prices. So it did disrupt to a certain degree. It kind of changed what ISPs were doing in these areas. But ultimately, as the article points out, the adoption was low. Obviously, laying fiber is time-consuming. It's costly, very costly. Google had recently, back in 2016, kind of shifted their approach to next-generation wireless technologies. They kind of put everything on pause. They, you know, had a couple of different people at the head of fiber filter through there, some layoffs, all that kind of stuff. But now, I mean, it's at a standstill. Fiber's really not doing a whole lot right now. We're not hearing much about it, and Google's just basically saying, "Hey, well, when there's something to change, we'll let you know, and we'll unpause where we're at right now." Did fiber disrupt enough, or do you think that there's still fuel for the fiber machine going forward? What do you think?
There's actually three things that fiber, I think, did. And I sat in the audience when it was announced. I sat at KC when they started. And I hoped desperately for it here in Austin and didn't get it.
Yeah.
But so I've been following this whole saga. They changed the price for broadband in the markets where they introed. They also helped bring gigabit internet to more places by getting communities to stand up and say, we want that, and getting consumers excited about gigabit. Even today, most people are like, I don't need a gigabit service. That's ridiculous. It also changed the pricing for free stuff. So Comcast actually has a free broadband for kids in school that are on the free and reduced lunch plan. And originally that was, I think it was about 5 megabits per second, it may have been even less. In Google, they had a free service that was either 5 or 10 megabits per second. And so Comcast boosted their offering to match Google's. Hmm. So in that sense, if you got a free lunch in the Comcast area and applied for this program, you got better broadband. So that's, it's small, but it matters.
Absolutely.
And then the third thing is they highlighted the issue of, for the FCC, and has changed some rules about making it easier to get pole attachments, which is so esoteric and nobody wants to think about it, but it's essential for getting any sort of infrastructure, broadband infrastructure, out to cities. So in Austin, for example, AT&T owned 2/3 of the poles, and Google was like, we want access. And AT&T's like, I don't think so. And there was some legal things, and that was actually one of the reasons why they kind of stopped deployment, I think, because they were like, God, this is really hard.
Yeah, no kidding. Right. And you think of Google and its seemingly infinitely deep pockets for stuff like this. And also their spending pattern, their funding pattern for back when fiber was just getting started and even a few years into it, where Google, you know, only very recently did Google kind of change course and change its way of thinking around how it was spending its money and how it was funding all of these crazy things that we know are just insanely expensive. It's very recently kind of tightened the strings a little bit on that. And, you know, so something like this, especially fiber is very known to be incredibly expensive. And even Google
did a lot of things to reduce. They did a lot of things to reduce the costs. So it's not enough to, they actually had some very big innovations. One, they were making their own networking equipment. Two, the way they went about picking cities helped market this stuff. And then three, they had done some work with new drilling innovations that would make it easier in some places. So there were technological innovations in Google kind of style innovations to make it cheaper, but it still wasn't cheap enough. And they still had to deal with people. And Google, as an engineering focused company, is terrible at dealing with people. They hate customers. They contracted out some of their fiber digs, and those guys are used to working for AT&T. And I don't think they maybe realized the scope of the problem. And then also people didn't sign up. Google's in love. I mean, this is probably like the Duo problem all over again, or any other good Google product that people are like, I don't understand how to use it. They were like, why do I need a gig? Mm-hmm. I don't need a gig. That's ridiculous. AT&T's got me locked into a contract. I'll just go with them. They have a gig now too. Hey.
Right.
Yeah. Stacey, what about the argument, especially from you? Do you buy that wireless is going to be as good as fiber for those customers who say, I don't need a gig?
So fixed wireless will be good in some places, as long as we can. There's a couple of places and things that might disrupt it. So I talked to the Aero guys a while back, and they're the guys doing 30. I think it's a 34. I used to have it on my board. What frequency? But they're using millimeter wave. It's the same sort of 5G basically for fixed wireless. They said that because the spectrum attenuates in weather and with trees, so it gets disrupted, Snow is actually a bigger problem than rain for them. So I think it's going to be kind of like satellite television, maybe?
Oh, right.
So, I mean, it's a very similar kind of idea, except your satellite dish will be it'll be pointing to someplace that's actually not in space. It'll be
weather. And Carsten, a company, you're so smooth that I went off the air a little while ago because the power went out here and the generator. Well, I have a generator, so it went on and everything went off. And snow can cause real havoc on anything that's above the ground.
Wow.
Whereas the fiber is nice and safe below the ground.
Yep.
Well, I mean, there are fiber cuts all the time. So that's not entirely human idiocy. True. Well, yeah, but I mean, like, we're not getting rid of that anytime soon.
True. I'm wondering, it's probably a tenuous connection here, but I'm wondering if there's any possible connection to, the need of drilling to make this fiber happen. Google's probably moving on from the whole idea of drilling for fiber anyways at this point. But there's an article that was put in here. Maybe, Jeff, I'm not sure if you put this in here or if you did, Stacey, about Google researching hypersonics.
I did. I was fascinated by that.
For drilling.
I didn't see that.
And in this article, it points out it costs geothermal energy and tunneling. But I'm like, I don't know. Maybe could
that
be a
first? It seemed like an April Fool's story.
So hypersonic technology. Hypersonics is basically five or more times the speed of sound. Usually that refers to aircraft or weapons. In this case, it's focused on climate and energy systems. Thanks to a company called Hypersciences that's developing this drilling system. Google might actually buy the company, according to this article. But it fires concrete projectiles at two or more kilometers per second ahead of the drill bit.
Say that again. Stop and say that again.
Fires concrete projectiles at 2 or more kilometers per second ahead of the drill bit. And so drills deep wells 10 times faster than what you have with existing systems. And
isn't this useful for the boring company too?
Yeah.
Isn't this useful for boring Hyperloop across the country?
Well, absolutely. How big are the, what are the limitations on the projectiles?
Yeah, well, I presume you can just do a bunch of, you just stack them up, right?
That's a big assumption when you're dealing with under the ground rocks and different striations and
all right, like, that's fair.
It might collapse.
Killjoy, Stacey.
Sorry, my mom was a geophysicist. We talked about
rocks. I was
rocks
getting
a
Hyperloop.
Lot.
All right, but, I want you to send this to her.
I will send it to her. But you know what is actually kind of neat? Think about when they talk about like geothermal, Google's very aggressive in how they power their data centers and they need more. A data center would be great powered by, if you could find a geothermal spot and have it just power up next to the data center, that's awesome because you'd have continual power that's renewable.
You do two things. You put it in the Arctic, so you cool the computers, and you geothermal the energy.
And you geothermal. I don't think that's a
verb. You just geothermal it.
You just geothermal it.
You just geothermal it.
Makes sense to me about as much as the story does.
Unless they're doing quantum computers, because then those have to be super cold, and you would just do that in the Arctic, and it might not even be cold enough, actually.
Claims it's five times cheaper than today's tunnel boring machines, able to dig tunnels at 2.5 times faster.
Wow.
Would pit Google head-to-head against Elon Musk's boring company. So, no.
So if it can do that with tunnels, just think what it could do for fiber.
There you go.
For drilling for fiber, huh? Yeah.
Or, I mean, even think about like their undersea
fiber is only below the sod.
Yeah.
What if you could do it, though, for the undersea cables, which currently just truck along at the bottom of the ocean? Some of them are buried, some of them aren't. Actually, they're buried, but not very deeply. What if you could bury them more deeply? Then you wouldn't have,
which
like...
Would be,
which with the fear of what the Ruskies are going to do with undersea cables, that's an important matter of security, right? If they're out exposed, bad things can happen to them.
Mm-hmm. No more shark attacks. I love that story about sharks being attracted to undersea cables.
And cutting off whole regions to the internet.
Darn you, Josh.
It shoots hypersonic concrete.
Blame the sharks. Why don't you?
Oh, good.
Sharks are always.
No, that is a cool. So I'm glad you put that on here, Jeff.
Yeah, it's cool. And apparently there's going to be more information to share at South by Southwest. So
really?
So apparently really? We will hear more about that. That's what I read. Maybe I misread that.
I'm envisioning at I.O. we'll all be in tunnels that have been bored by the hypersonic tunneling. That's what I want.
The new I.O. will be completely underground.
Well, by the way,
yeah.
You know, because you know, on the show I had my bridge phobia, right?
Yeah.
So I always figure, but I don't have a problem going in the Lincoln Tunnel. Because it's bored into the stone, right? So it's okay. So even if it had a little problem in the concrete, it's not going to leak. I'm not going to have a problem. It's okay, right? I didn't know that BART is above the rock in the water in a tube that gets dropped into the water. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah. So that scares me. Now, of course, I say it should be bored into the stone, but in earthquake territory,
yeah.
That would be a problem.
You probably don't want
somebody.
That, yeah. That's interesting. I had no idea.
And New York is unique because its bedrock is actually good rock. Isn't it granite or schist or something really stable as opposed to like something crumbly and gross?
Whatever it is, Stacey, it's the best
it's
rock
the
because
best
we are
rock,
the center yes. of the university.
Nothing but the best rock for New York. Yeah.
I feel like there's this whole story about, I can't believe I read a whole story about the bedrock of New York, but I believe you guys have really good rock for supporting tall buildings and digging stuff through without it crumbling.
Yeah, no kidding.
We don't. We're in limestone country.
Anyway, that was quite a detour. I apologize, but I just wanted to...
No,
there was a tenuous. Jason allowed
the
boring,
absolutely. Boring thing was
the it works. It worked. I will allow for it. How else can we detour here? The U.S. Department of Defense. This has a little bit of some people kind of a little curious, a little worried, I'd say, employees at Google anyway, some of them. U.S. Department of Defense is partnering with Google to create artificial intelligence that can analyze drone footage. So apparently Project Maven, which is with the U.S. Department of Defense, all about identifying objects in drone footage. Some employees at Google were outraged to discover this. That this
they got
happening.
Out of Boston Dynamics because of just this. The Boston Dynamics would be used for defense contractors.
Yeah.
And you know, unmanned warfare. And, yeah, I don't see this playing well with Google employees.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that Google's offering assistance to the military for something, you know, something along the lines of surveillance. Also, there's the ethical considerations around the use of machine learning systems for this sort of thing. Google says that it's working, quote, to develop policies and safeguards around the use of machine learning for military applications. And then another Google spokesman stressed that this is a research project. Don't worry. It's just a research project. We have no plans to implement it. There are no plans to implement these results into AI-controlled military hardware. Don't worry.
See, I think that these technology companies need to operate more like hospitals. What do you call those kind of committees you have in hospitals before you do something that might be new?
IBRs?
What's that stand for?
IRBs, Internal Review Board.
Yeah, Internal Review Board. So, you know, you have cases like something at Facebook, somebody at Facebook did something really stupid, it's on the rundown, asking people whether they think that it's okay for pedophiles to look at photos of underage naked children. You know, why would you ask that? Who in the place would ask that? Right? I mean, it's obviously stupid. It's obviously wrong. They apologize for it immediately. But how something can happen? Oh, it's just an experiment. It's just a test. Is too much the justification for too much stupidity in technology companies. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of, it's just a research project that it's just knowledge. Not going to cut it anymore when you control the world, man.
Yeah.
Stacey, what do you think?
That was a lot of things to throw out all at the same time. So I'm like,
just the whole drone.
Collected?
What about the drone thing? Google drone military drones. Are you okay with that? Or
no, I feel like Google usually picks technologies that have a benefit outside of they might do something like this if it had another benefit for like society or their information gathering. And I guess it does from the sense of information gathering, but it does strike me as a project that it's got bad PR associated with it. And also it's kind of, it lives up to everyone's fear about Google, which is they can see everything and yes. they may one day use it for evil.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and Boston Dynamics, I think they probably didn't like that visual as well of being associated with something that was clearly scary as all get out. however, I'm like, the sand flea is cute, but that's the only one that's cute. Only redeemable Boston Dynamics robot. Yeah, so,
they're scary and fascinating all at the same time. I'm equal parts scared and fascinated by Boston Dynamics robots.
And I think a lot of Google projects can be used for surveillance and could have that.
Sure.
But they have at least the veneer of they could also help humanity. So I think this is just I get why people are outraged. I do get worried about exactly this sort of thing.
Or maybe the safeguard that people, you know, tell themselves anyways, which is, well, it's one thing if Google is doing the surveillance for their own means. It's another thing if Google is doing their surveillance for an arm of the government or for the defense, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, and it's
that
true.
Sort of the relationship takes it another step further.
Right. The technology is going to be out there and published and is available, and the government can use it too. That doesn't stop anything. But how complicit do you want to be in these activities directly?
Yeah.
And rightly, I think they say not complicit at all. And I think it's good that tech companies are asking themselves this because they are in a position, A, where everyone's like, oh, we hate you, tech companies. You're evil. They've suddenly become evil. I know, Jeff. I'm just saying in the popular mind, people are much more, now we're like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
But
and it's going to get used against them because we're finished. Go ahead.
No, and I was just saying, so it's good that they're actually having these conversations now.
Yes.
And I hope that they do. And I think Facebook, with their survey, I'm like, what? That I think was just, I don't know how that even got out there.
Yeah,
I really don't.
That's baffling.
Like, oh, it's just so stupid. Well, and now you have not, you know, because it's my friends on the left at The Guardian are going all moral panic, techno panic. But now you have right wing filmmakers making a film about the evils of Google and Facebook.
Good segue.
Both ends.
We're on the same page on this one, Jeff.
There you go.
I had it open. I had the notes open and everything. and this is kind of what you guys are talking about, right? Like big tech and what is driving big tech. How is that, like, what are the grand effects of these decisions that these ginormous mammoth technology companies are making? But that, how that's mixing with politics. You got Peter Schweizer? I don't really know. But apparently a right-wing journalist. He actually at one time was, I think, speechwriting consultant for President George W. Bush. Anyways, he's producing a documentary aiming to show how these technology companies filter the news, how they highlight their own agenda. It's tentatively called The Creepy Line, which I think is a perfect title, right?
Like it is using Eric Schmidt's famous quote.
Yes. But it's a focus on censorship, on oppression in digital media and big technology and big tech, and apparently will be screened for the first time, or at least expected to be screened this May at the Cannes Film Festival. He's also done previously a documentary with Steve Bannon, produced by Steve Bannon, called Clinton Cash. So that kind of gives you a sense of the direction that you can probably expect out of this documentary.
So this is where the tech companies are. They're going to get attacked from both sides now as big, to use Stacey's word, evil empires. I'm joking, Stacey. And that means that, like it or not, or however virtuous they know they are, they have to be very careful. And I want them to be innovative. I want them to be smart. But I want them to be careful about doing dumb things that are going to get used against them and the entirety of the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious. I'm equal parts curious And I don't know what the other part of this is. Like, I know that this is going to be a fueled, you know, fueled right wing sort of perspective. You know,
trepidation
based on who it's coming from. Doesn't mean I don't want. I'm not interested in watching it because there, even though, you know, my own personal agenda, which I will keep entirely out of this show, I'm still definitely feel like the point that we're at with technology companies. Like I'm worried about it. Like I'm worried about the ramifications of what we think we know, but we actually don't, and how that's painting and shaping the world. It's certainly been a reason that I've stepped away to a certain degree from social media in the past year. And I know but don't I'm not
do,
alone.
So I just saw two stories. Don't please, Jason. Don't do this. Don't do this. I left social media for 2 months and I saw a different world.
No, I know.
Farhad Manjoo just did it. And I tried to read that thing four times and I couldn't do it.
No.
Got me too pissed off.
Yeah, he's hit or miss, man. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes you're like, what are you smoking,
pissed
Farhad?
Pissed me off.
I can understand, though. I can understand the perspective, right? Like when you're on social media, when we have a habit around social media, at least I have a habit around Twitter that started back in 2007. It's a daily habit. And So much of my daily reality is shaped around the moments that I have when I open Twitter and I see what's actually going on, because I do read that instead of reading a newspaper, to use Farhad's example. And I don't know if it necessarily makes me a happier person to do that. So when I say stepping away and being worried about technology, like, I mean, not entirely, but I certainly feel like my life is better when I'm not consumed by all of this stuff. And I think there are a lot of people that don't make that realization, might not, I don't know, I guess they have to realize that for themselves.
My wife started watching more tennis, so she'd watch less cable news. I get that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, that will come out.
Well, on a lighter note, we have celebrities promoting assistant.
Yeah, during the Oscars. Did you guys watch the Oscars? Did you care?
I fell didn't asleep. Watch the Oscar. I do watch the dresses, though, and on social media. Yeah. But I did want to see the commercial. Will you play the commercial?
Yeah, we've got a few of them in there, so we can pick one of them. I mean, it's, you know, it's an article that kind of points to a couple of them. See, I mean, you can literally just pick one of them and just go ahead and play it. But it's basically celebrities realizing that Google might just be smarter than them for doing some of these things.
Over, R. Nope. Backspace. Over.
It feels like we started searching 2 hours ago. Feels like we never gonna find this show. No, 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 no.
So what you see, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. Hey, Google.
Hi,
yeah, so
out.
It's Chrissy Teigen, John Legend doing... I mean, we've all been there, right? Trying to enter in something on a remote, on the on-screen keyboard, and it's the most painful experience in the entire world. Well, maybe
this
not the
is
most.
Actually, it's
pretty bad.
Not the most. I've had a child.
Pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. but Fair I will enough. Say, we have an older Chromecast, but we don't have the new one, which works with the Google Home. And I really have thought, it might be worth $70 just to be like,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Show me this. Oh, sorry. Sorry, everyone. My phone did it too. I'm
mine
so
did not. Who knows how well that translated. But yeah, so which actually, so I think what I've realized over the last couple of years is that Google has a smart marketing team. Like I like, sometimes you watch these marketing campaigns and it's just like eye roll, super cheesy, whatever. I don't get that as often with Google as I do with others. Yet, I don't know how effective they are at actually selling their stuff. I don't know if you guys talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but there were stats on how Google's sales of the Pixel devices had been in 2017. IDC basically said that 3.9 million units shipped in 2017 of both last generation Pixel and this generation Pixel. And you compare that to, you know, the behemoth, obviously, but Apple selling 77.3 million iPhones in the fourth quarter alone. So 3.9 million total, 77.3 million in a quarter. And it just kind of, it just screams at you that like Google has all this money. They have marketing prowess. I like their marketing campaigns and their ad campaigns, but it just doesn't seem to do much. So I wonder how an ad campaign around Assistant is really going to move the needle for Google.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I think it's the same problem we had with what's the photo thing we talked about earlier?
Lens.
Lens. Yeah. It's also reminding you it exists.
Yeah, that's
true.
You can
use this. You can use it on your phone.
Or if you are using it, confirmation that you're doing something right.
Yes. If John Legend does it.
You're on the right team. You're on the John Legend, Chrissy Teigen team.
Stacey, were you starting to say something?
No, I was going to say it's kind of like, and I'm very curious because everybody has been abuzz about the Spike Lee directed Apple HomePod commercial, which is pretty. But I'm just like, why are we so excited about this thing for a product that quite honestly is not awesome? none of the reviews out there seem really excited. And
yeah,
I mean,
there's a whole lot of asterisks involved in reviews.
It's great if you live on a remote island and only like to communicate with penguins.
Yeah.
But the ad is cool.
Audio listeners, you're just gonna have to trust us.
It's FKA Twigs.
Harried woman comes home from work in a New York apartment with many locks.
To find her best friend, the HomePod, right?
Hey Siri, play me something I'd like. Okay.
We stayed up all night watching a comedy show.
She's really not happy.
No.
What a nice conversation. I'm too floored.
I think she's relaxing.
I think the drink's helping too.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is me after Twig. Like,
give me the gin.
I'm done.
Oh, we can dance. There we go. Now it's coming around. Now, do you have or have you tested the HomePod? Whoa.
Kevin has tested the HomePod. I sent it to him because he's an actual Apple Music person.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't actually play anything on it. So he was the logical tester. That's one of those asterisks.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's very limited on support of what devices can use it. Yeah, I know. This is...
It is a long but kind of fun, cool.
Yeah, it's funky looking. I like the visual aspects of it.
With her mind, she's now expanding her apartment and redecorating.
She forgot that she had a horrible day at work at this point. And
well,
that's the power
you
of HomePod.
If you could redecorate your apartment?
No kidding.
I'm like,
where is this ad even playing? It's a long one.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, I see a deer in my backyard trying to, almost unable to get through the snow. It's so deep. Jeez.
So there's an ad that's an Apple ad where they're like, yeah, this will change your freaking life, as opposed to like, here, we're going to show you how to use our product.
Right. I actually saw an article right before coming here. It's down at the bottom of the doc, Josh. Almost 20% of the U.S. has a home smart speaker at this point. At least according...
That's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. I thought so.
Does that include like Sonos and other brands? Or
that
are those
is,
smart speakers?
Let's see here. This is per Rain and Polestring teamed up with VoiceBot. So three names I've never heard of. Maybe you guys have. But they interviewed 1,057 adults across the U.S. and based on how they, you know, conducted that study. So I guess that's the important part that I can't read here, but they found 19.7% of the people they spoke to say that they own a smart speaker. So I imagine it would. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like it's isolated to just Google Homes or the HomePod or whatever, but.
Oh, guys, I screwed up. I said Spike Lee. I meant Spike Jones, the dude who did Her.
Okay, all right, that makes more sense.
Yes, my brain just yeah.
I was like, wow, this is like Spike Lee. I love his work, but this is heavy, not what I'm seeing from him.
Yeah, sorry, my brain was thinking, you know, Spike Jones, but my mouth said
and that makes more sense that it's more music
yeah
music video driven.
Yes.
But yeah, 20%. So, which I'm curious to kind of ask you about, Stacey, like 20% of the U.S. population, does this mean that we are officially like in the smart home renaissance? Or, I mean, what does it say about the smart home?
Sure. So I buy the numbers. I do think that there's a ton of people who have these. I think what this means is we've hit the limits of our current user interfaces for actually controlling devices, and we've all realized that. And so the next step, this is going to be like, you know, like I think of gaming with like joysticks, how we started out with like the actual joystick, and then we got more sophisticated. What's going to happen is we get more sophisticated user interactions. Like voice is awesome for some things. It is terrible for others. And you can already see this, like Amazon and Google are both trying to cram things like routines into this because it's still too hard to like, you can control something, but like every single individual device in my house, and I have like almost 100 at least, maybe more, has to have its own unique individual name.
Wait. Like, have you ever counted?
Well, I mean, like every light bulb. So why is this funny?
It's so funny. I know. It's just, I thought, you know, people who were really into this might have 8-10 things in their home.
I have at least 35. I have at least 35. No, I have 40 now Wi-Fi connected devices. And so that doesn't include, you know, 20 light switches, probably 30 smart bulbs. That doesn't include any of the sensors.
Right.
I think queen of things.
I think if you really add it up, though, I think most people would be surprised how many devices that are in their home that are actually connected via Wi-Fi. And you just don't think about it. And, you know, like our Honeywell thermostat that we set up the first day we upgraded our heating system and then never thought about before. It's connected to our Wi-Fi. It has been. We just never use it to control anything, but it's another IoT device in our home.
Yeah, and any appliance that you buy starting this year and next year will have connectivity built into it. Whether or not you turn it on, it's up to you, but it's going to have it. Yeah. So, I mean, Comcast last year said that in its homes, they had an average of 11 devices. Wow. 11 Wi-Fi connected devices. And again, think about it. A family of four, you're going to have your computers, your phones, probably a Kindle, a tablet maybe.
Yeah, you're right.
And then basic stuff like a printer. I mean, people still have printers, I think. I don't know. So start from there and then add your TVs. And you're not even into weird Stacey-like stuff yet.
Right. And depending on the size of your household, I mean, just everybody has a phone. That right there is 4 or 5 people, depending, you know, and your laptop, 6, 7, 8. I mean, just in general, you probably have 10 devices easy. Most, you know,
You know what I want for my birthday, which isn't from 6 months? Well, you know what I want for my number next week, Stacey, is an inventory of your things.
I don't actually know if I could give that to you. That's actually one of the scarier aspects of this.
You don't even know what things are buried into your life.
Well, yeah, because I can only see the Wi-Fi stuff, but I have, like I said, like the Zigbee light bulbs. So then I have to go into each individual app because I personally have like 4 different types of light bulbs. But then also my my like motion sensors. How many of those are there? I don't know. Yeah. You know, so.
Wow.
Okay, so you've got a home full of things. Yet we have companies
It is Thing Castle.
Yes, it's the thing. Yes, the Thing Castle. No kidding. And you know, then you have companies like Amazon who are deciding they're not going to sell certain things anymore. For instance, the Nest products, newer Nest products, are not going to be sold by Amazon. Amazon's current inventory of Nest products, they're going to drop those off as they sell out. And I think Ness has said, well, we don't want our stuff in your store anyways. And I don't know. It just kind of has me wondering, like, we're at a point where people have, you know, are buying these smart home devices, which gives them the capability, the access for, you know, the sea of devices to connect to it. But it feels also in some ways like the smart home war is kind of heating up right now to the point where it's like, yeah, well, maybe we need to buckle down and our products only support our devices, Google, and not yours.
Google and Amazon, in this case, are behaving exactly like the carriers used to behave when they started blocking and throttling things like Skype or WhatsApp, things that can. And this is not a good look for them.
No,
this is really against. This is bad for consumers. Kevin and I talked about this a lot on the show because obviously that's a big part of what the show is about. But I am so frustrated with them, and I am so frustrated. Like, this appears to be part of an escalation of the, hey, you can't play, you know, YouTube on Amazon Fire TV or Amazon Echo shows, which sucked, right? And now they're saying that, Gizmodo, I think, had a story that talked about a conference call. And so this is coming, basically, the Google guys think it's coming directly from Bezos saying, fine, you don't let us play YouTube, we won't sell your gear. So what's the next step? My Amazon Echo suddenly stops controlling my Nest thermostat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
boys, get along. I do mean boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the sort of thing that, well, not only do you hurt your customers, you hurt the whole space.
Right.
No one's going to buy this stuff. And then eventually some senator is going to be like, wait, what? Oh, this is not cool at all.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I've really felt like there's been a lot of cooperation. Like for a little while, it's felt like in the beginning there were all these different standards for IoT to connect to, but then you had these home assistants that really end up being this unifying force to be like, yeah, we don't really care what you have, we'll control it all. And then now it seems to be veering away from each other, and I fear that because, like you said, how is that good for the industry as a whole? As consumers, I don't want to have to look and see, oh, well, this device only supports these IoT devices and this one supports those. So I've got to choose my side. And I guess I like those things. So I got to go this way. Like consumers don't want that. They need simple. And I feel like possibly that might be moving further away from that.
And this is why I want standards, not ecosystems. Everyone's like, ooh, right. Ecosystems. And I'm like, take your ecosystem, because ecosystems are, they're fluctuating. You can like get mad at somebody, but with the standards, you're just like, this has got to work with this
right.
all the time. And by God, it would not mess with innovation. I hate that excuse. Mm-hmm. There are standards that can mess with innovation, but the basic stuff.
Just interconnectivity. Okay.
Yeah. It's actually interoperability. It's not just interconnectivity. Sorry. And that's what makes this so hard. Right.
Would you feel better?
Let's talk about.
Would you feel better if your Echo laughed at you?
I was going to say, let's talk about evil echoes.
Yeah,
this is.
I'm so
strange.
Glad that Amazon finally admitted this. By the way, because like I've been looking at all these stories and I'm like, oh my God, is this real? This is awesome.
Apparently, echoes are randomly laughing at people. They're all going to laugh at you.
Yeah, so, we played the laugh on our show. It is not something you want to hear.
It is more of a cackle. It is more of an evil cackle.
It's the second link that I have there is a tweet. Josh, if you go to the doc, there's a Twitter link there that'll play for you the cackle on a JBL Echo device.
Yeah.
Let's see here if we can hear this. Here it goes. Wow, other than that, it's on repeat and now it sounds fake. It hardly sounded like it was coming from a device. It just kind of sounded like someone in the background laughing as they were recording the video.
Yeah. So there's so much, so many questions I have about this. I'm like, are they all using the same skill? Because like you could have a skill in the Echo and maybe it would just like do this, like just to prank you randomly, right? Like it could be, or is this somebody hacked into people's, I don't understand.
Has Amazon acknowledged this at all?
They acknowledged it and said they're working on it. They actually, technically, they acknowledged that people have reported this to them. I believe.
We acknowledge that you say there's a problem.
So, Amazon responded to the creepiness in a statement to The Verge saying, we are aware of this and working to fix it. So the fact that they're working to fix it implies that there is something they could do.
Something to fix.
That's so weird. Is this like, is this a prank, an internal prank? Like somebody on their last day is like, check this out. Laugh into the Echo database and set it to go off.
And it's randomized
months.
In some way that you can't find it.
Oh, that's so weird.
But I will say that if in the middle of the night that happened, I would be like, what just happened?
Oh, or you'd jump out of bed.
Yeah.
Have you seen the cat watching the horror movie?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to do this. I'm going to put it in chat right now. You got to do this. Because this is what it would do to you at night. Okay, here we go. Got it. Set it.
All right, so it's in the... it's in the chat, the in-doc chat for you, Josh.
Wait a second. Oh, I should give you a better link. Hold on.
If you just do a search for cat watching horror movie, it comes up.
You got it.
I think, anyways. I think
you got to watch this. I'm telling you, folks, this is worth it. Got to hit a sound up. So you see a cute little kitty. He's mesmerized watching.
It is cute. Oh, my God. Oh, it gets even cuter.
It does. Just keep going. You got to go through the whole thing. The whole thing.
This is why the internet's this wonderful. Is me. Oh, my God. This cat.
Hey, this is me the first time I watched The Shining.
The
cat's
the eyes really get wider.
It moves like,
ooh. Oh, no.
Oh, his pupil action is awesome.
This is Bates.
Yes.
What movie are they watching?
Oh, is it Norman? Is it Psycho?
No, wait. Wait.
Oh, it's so great.
The cat, for those of you who are only listening, when you heard the scream, guess what the cat did? It just leapt just away.
Jumped out of the
that
frame.
That is what would happen to Stacy if... she heard a laugh in the middle of the night out of her 43 devices. Suddenly all around the house is laughing uncontrollably and randomly.
Oh, could you imagine that standard horror movie, like your dolls are suddenly laughing at you, cackle that.
Yeah, that would not fly.
That's a Halloween prank that maybe Amazon needs to consider never doing. If they want
never
people.
Guessing it's the Russians trying to get us to fear our technology.
Could be the case. That stranger things seem to be happening right now. Are there any final stories in here that you guys want to make sure that we get in before we go to tips?
I was excited about the Amazon Live.
Oh, I think we should do Twitter.
Rethinking everything.
Yeah, because Twitter, I guess I should disclose that I'm not working for them or anything, but they asked me my opinion before this happened. So Jack Dorsey, as you may have seen, put out a tweet storm in which he said, okay, we recognize that Twitter is having an impact on the health of the public conversation, and we have to do something about that. And they've put out an RFP to get people, researchers and such, to help them figure out what to do here. They're admitting that they don't know exactly what to do. It's pretty refreshing, actually. I think Twitter, one could argue that they should have done this sooner, fine, but they're doing it. And so I wrote a post saying that the flight to quality is on the runway. I think we see Google, Facebook, and Twitter all now grappling with how to deal with manipulation and harassment and trolls and a lack of quality. And it's not going to be easy. And they're going to make mistakes and they're going to mess some things up. But I think it's important that they're taking this on themselves. So salute to Jack.
Yeah, it's not an easy challenge. Obviously, Twitter is not alone. I mean, I feel like all of the big tech companies, you know, kind of attaching to what we were talking about earlier about the big tech pushback. But I mean, they're all forced to realize at this point that there are unintended consequences to their Silicon Valley approach to, you know, move fast, break things, and all that sort of stuff. Whether they want to address it or not, they're realizing they kind of have to. At least Jack Dorsey's taking a good look. I think it's interesting to open it up to the public and to experts, like he said, to say, hey, what ideas you got? Because, like, we need them.
Right, because we do. And you know, meanwhile, we see, you know, when Facebook is putting out fires with this, and because of a law in Germany, the Netzdege law in Germany, they've got to get rid of anything that could be possibly construed as hate speech within 24 hours, and they're going to find a huge amount of money. So satire's kind of gone out with the bathwater. And so
the
now
Germans
Facebook
were never good at satire.
There you go.
Sorry.
But so now there's a religious satire site. I'm forgetting the name of it. B something B, and they did a funny piece about how CNN has a washing machine for spin cycles. You know, it doesn't gain anything in my translation, but that got taken off. Because these systems can't figure out satire. So now Facebook has to go and try to get help and figure out satire. This is hard stuff.
Yeah. And Snopes apparently, heard from people that, you know, they were taking the article literally. So they ended up debunking it because Snopes has a relationship with Facebook that ends up signaling to Facebook that Snopes was on it and that it's actually fake news, because that's what that relationship is all about. Is this stuff that's posted here real or fake? So then Facebook ended up hitting up the Babylon Bee, was the name of the site.
Which is very funny.
Administrator, to let him know that his satire is getting the smackdown, basically. Which, when you read it, because you're Facebook, like, of course there isn't a washing machine that spins news.
Of course not. But the problem was, when they built the system for the fact-checking, they didn't have a satire box.
Right.
So Snopes had to say, well, if your Uncle Abner really thinks this is true, okay, we're going to tell him it's not. But that triggered the flag, because Snopes had no opportunity to call it satire.
Yep.
And as I say, as I said 10 times, this isn't easy, but they're working on it. They're trying. I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to draw a line between satire and fake news, you know? There are a lot of people that would say, fake news is entirely satire. It's satire to the point of, just look at all the fools that fell for it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the point of its existence, is to prove that people will fall for anything.
I just saw a story on HuffPost. It's not on the rundown, but Rebecca, who are the financial backers of Breitbart? Rebecca.
I'm happy. I don't know the answer, I guess.
The Mercers. The Mercers.
Mansour.
Mercer. So the Mercers gave a bunch of money to the New York Museum of Natural History. So some pranksters went in and put in things like, "Hey kids, build your own fracking test," stuff to try to shame the museum out of taking their money. Right. And so this notion of fake news and satire and guerrilla theater, and it all gets mixed up together. And that's the world we live in. Dana Boyd evidently gave a brilliant speech today, which I can't wait to goes up online at South by Southwest EDU, about the dangers of getting too addicted to this notion of facts and media literacy. And so it's a complex world, and we're expecting the platforms to do binary things, and that's what they tend to do, is binary things, and they've got to do things in the grays.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, that was the end of that.
It is a confusing world.
I put Stacey to sleep.
No, Stacey, wake up, Stacey. Sorry. I'm waking up. No.
All right, I know what'll wake you up, Stacey. Whatever your thing happens to be this week.
Okay, I have a double related thing, because this is actually related to... Okay, so my thing is a site that I read about this week and I started trying out with various devices in my life. So it is called... Hold on, I'm going to find you. Prebot. Is that really what it's called? Prybot.
Prybot.
For privacy. And Polisys? It's an AI-powered summary of any privacy policy. And... it looks at things like, so go check
that's
it out.
Good.
It's a prybot.org, Polisys. And it has a bunch of stuff already loaded. So you can look at like Twitter's privacy policy. It looks at the types of info that they collect, why they collect it, and then the options they give. So I started running a lot of my IoT stuff, because one of the things I hate about their data collection is they're like, yeah, we're going to collect all this data and we're going to share some of it with people. Most of it's for us. And yeah, we want all of it to make our product better. So it's very basic. But the only option you have if you don't like it is to not use it, which I think is actually, in some ways, it makes sense, because a lot of the connectivity and data collection on these devices is necessary for it to work. But in other cases, you're like, dude, I just spent an hour installing a new thermostat, and you're telling me that if I want to use it, I have to abide by this privacy policy, and then I'm going to return it and have a restocking fee, possibly. Those kind of things drive me nuts. So this is fun, but the story that came out, I think it was it yesterday or the day before on MoviePass with the CEO saying, hey, we're actually a data-driven business and we're going to track you before your movie and after your movie. None of that's actually in MoviePass's privacy. None of the details are in that privacy policy that they post to users. It doesn't say, says that they're going to get your location, you know, as part of this, but it doesn't say we're getting your location for whatever amount of time before the movie or after the movie. So the two things together, one, it's like, hey, this is good, but it also shows how inadequate the current state of privacy disclosure is, actually.
Man, no kidding. I missed that part of the movie pass kind of news from yesterday. Thought it was very interesting from the keynote. He did not care at all, you know, based on what I read. I didn't actually watch him up there, so I don't know what his tenor was when he was delivering it, but it was like, yeah, we track you before, we track you after. That's kind of how I interpreted it anyways. It seemed like he was like, yep, data's currency, and we got all of it.
Right.
Okay, I guess that's why you're paying $8 for unlimited movies per month. I guess that's it. How do you feel about that? You know, maybe that's okay
$10.
For you. Well, yeah, I think they have some sort of a promo or something for $8.
So, yeah, so that's and that makes sense. I mean, again, you don't get anything for free in this world. And now free, and this is another thing that I think is important with a lot of web services and IoT, is we have to actually start understanding that free is not free, that there are costs both to your data and privacy, but also even societally. And, you know, that's a big topic, but we can talk about it another time.
Your pick actually reminds me of, a site that I'm sure you're already familiar with, TOSDR.org, Terms of Service Didn't Read. Very similar, right? Like it's whole purpose, and you can install browser add-ons on both of these sites that we're talking about, is to let you know about these things that maybe you didn't know about these companies that you're signing up for, you're agreeing to, all that kind of stuff. Because if you're not pouring through those pages upon pages of text when you sign up for a service, you know, you could be agreeing to something that is a very bad idea. So they do this to make it a little bit easier for you, and I'm happy that they do. Jeff, you've got a few numbers in there. What's your number?
I found this one charming. So Chris Hughes, who was Mark Zuckerberg's roommate, one night was on his, he wasn't a rich kid when he went to Harvard, just a smart kid, and he was doing his job, and he and Mark had to have the talk. They had to have the talk about equity. So none of them knew anything about this stuff, but Hughes was a little more naive, and he went to Zuck and asked him for 10%. And he and Zuck went on a walk with one umbrella in the rain. Zuck evidently loves to do all these things on walks. And told him, no, what you do is not worth 10%, and I have to have equity for other people. And so he gave him 2%. And at the IPO, that 2% was worth $500 million. So I haven't heard a complaint since.
Yeah, no kidding.
Little story here. So way back when, back in the day, I was asked to come to an event for News Corp, actually, to moderate a panel with Mark Zuckerberg and Nick Denton. And before we went on, Zuck was asking Nick advice about hiring salespeople, and he just mentioned offhandedly something about giving salespeople equity, and Nick jumped on his throat and said, don't do that. Salespeople come and go. They're widgets. You can hire them anytime. No, that's too, you don't know how valuable your equity is going to be. Truer words were never spoken.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. We all need to meet a Zuckerberg and get 2%, don't we?
So we can I'll mind. Take 0.2%.
Life goals. My tip is an app that maybe I looked in the doc and I couldn't see that you guys had ever brought it up on the show. Maybe it came up somewhere along the line, but we were talking a little bit about Android P and some of the flavors of Android.
Yeah, flavors
P.
Works. Yeah, a little more poetic. Yeah,
that works for me. Of the new OS, part of this is smart replies in your notification shade. And you can do that now, actually, with an app that Google is beta testing right now called Reply. You can't find it in the Play Store. They're doing a very limited beta test of this, but I'm linking to the APK Mirror site, APK Mirror, created by the folks behind Android Police. It's a trusted place to get some of these APKs that are harder to find. So you can go there, you can download it onto your device, and I can even show it off right now. Basically what it does, it gives you some controls. Well, I won't pull up the settings, but it basically gives you controls to determine what pieces of your data it can actually use in Smart Replies, and then it connects into messaging apps so that in your notification shade, you get some of these Smart Replies. For instance, this was a test from the Reply app. It says, want to grab dinner? Interesting that a robot wants me to go to dinner with them, but great. I can reply, sure, I'm down, or what time? I just send that, and it sends off. Burke sent me an image of his tablet. Oh, here, let me get away from that. Sent me an image of his tablet. I wish I had the preview of that in my notification, but on Android P, apparently I will. His Nexus 7 that we were talking about earlier. And so it says, sent an image, and I saw it on my browser, so I can say, hey, that looks good. I send that. He'll get that reply. And it makes messaging just a little bit easier from your notification shade. So it's called Reply. It's by Google. And if you want to find it, you can just search apkmirror.com. You'll find it there and you can install it. And I've noticed that it's really handy. It also has like a while driving feature. So it detects when your device is in driving mode, or that your device detects anyways that you're actually driving, and it will cancel any notifications or auto reply to say, hey, I'm driving. I'll get back to you when I park, that sort of stuff. And there's a bunch of other features that it does kind of intelligently based around like your calendar and all that kind of stuff. But if you want a little preview of what to expect out of Android P, that's cool. One way to get started.
I can't wait.
That's cool. I can't see any exclamation points for yours. So
yeah, apparently I'm not that excited.
Jason
when
is a calm fellow, unlike you, who's all excited.
Like, man,
you're all caps and all exclamation points
all
the time.
Caps. I'm not all caps.
Okay.
I'm not that curmudgeonly. Oh.
And then there's, of course, Donald Trump's, which will be randomly capitalized.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, randomly misspelled. Or even just making up words sometimes. Brand new words. That's it. I think that's all we got. This episode of This Week in Google is almost finished. Next week, Leo will, of course, be returning, but I'm really happy to have the chance to do this. And Stacey, it was a pleasure to get the chance to podcast with you again. It's always fun. Thank you.
Always fun. And thank you. And remember, everyone, tomorrow night, Austin, Friedman's Barbecue, or Friday morning, Antone's, Capital One, whatever event. So come see us in real life.
Capital IRL. One House. I'm told, is the full...
I'm like, Antone's is a bar, so it's really hard for me to say the Capital One House at Antone's.
Is Antone's a good bar?
Oh, it's an excellent... It used to be an excellent club. Famous.
Does it have beer? If it has beer, it's a good bar.
That's true.
Oh, that's a really low bar for a bar.
That's where I go.
A low bar for a bar. But it's true. If it has beer, it's probably a good bar.
It's good enough. After a few, it's good enough.
Definitely don't miss it. And you'll see Stacey there as well. Jeff, thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to get the chance to do this with you as well.
We miss you not being around more often. And it's really good back, and you do as ever a great job.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Buzzmachine.com. Anything else you want to leave people with?
That's fine. That's fine. All right. That's enough.
That's all you need then. Cool. Well, we do this show. Leo normally does this show with Jeff and Stacey every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 2100 UTC. That's going to be changing this weekend because we've got the time change here in the U.S. And I'm not smart enough to figure it out on the fly. So just like be attentive. Go to our website and you'll see the calendar there and you can check it out for yourself. But twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G. If you want to go and subscribe, you can do that. If you want to catch the show live, just hit twit.tv/live. But, you know, you're probably going to catch it after the fact. And you've got all of your subscribe options on the site and everything that you need to know from there going forward. But I think that's about it for me. I'm Jason Howell. Thanks for having me along. You can catch me on Tech News Weekly. I'm going to be on that tomorrow and all about Android, of course, talking. I'm sure next week we're going to dive a little bit deeper onto Android P and what we know over the coming week. So tune into that as well. I'm Jason Howell. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye, everyone.